The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
For those of you who have been coming for some time or have been here before, know that at least when I'm teaching, I'm Diana Clark, by the way, that when I'm teaching, we do loving kindness first towards a benefactor, and then we expand it and do it for ourselves. And today, I'd like to just talk a little bit about loving kindness for ourselves, with this recognition that sometimes it's not so easy, especially if we've been doing it for a benefactor and or a being for whom it's very easy to feel love towards. And then when we expand to include ourselves, we may feel a little hesitation, or it's not quite as easy. Or it may be glaringly obvious that it's difficult, right? There's all this wide spectrum. Maybe on some days it's easy and some days it's difficult. So there's a number of reasons why this may be the case, why sending loving kindness towards ourselves may not be as easy as sending it towards other people. And I'm not saying that everybody has this experience. I'm not saying that it's necessarily your dominant experience. There may just be a little corner of your experience that has this vague kind of notion that may not be well articulated. Somehow, like, I don't deserve this unconditional love. Or, yeah, this feeling, like, I don't deserve it. And again, I'm saying this may not be everybody's experience, and it may not be your dominant experience, but I do want to talk about this nevertheless, if it's even just a little corner of your mind that thinks about this. And I'll say that part of the reason why we start loving-kindness practice with a benefactor is the recognition that, in fact, this is a common response, is that it's a little bit easier to do it for a benefactor or a baby or a kitten or a puppy rather than for ourselves. So we kind of like warm up with where it's easy. But there's a number of reasons why we might have this idea or why it might be difficult to do loving kindness for ourselves. And one is when we are looking inside, whether that's during formal meditation practice or just in our ordinary lives, we might look inside and see that or experience anxiety or sadness, or we may see that we are judging everybody not in a favorable way, or that we're irritable. And these feelings actually are uncomfortable. We may feel bad. We may feel bad that we feel bad, or we just may feel bad. And there may be this kind of diffuse, unclear kind of logic, if I feel bad, then I must be bad. Or if I feel bad, it must be because I'm failing at something. Or if I feel bad, then I must have done something wrong, or something like this. Again, this may not be clearly articulated, just maybe this vague notion of just having these uncomfortable feelings, sadness, anxiety, watching ourselves judge other people, judge ourselves. It doesn't mean, just because we feel bad doesn't mean that a mistake has happened, right? Through evolution, our minds, our biology isn't created just to make us happy all the time. It's just the way things unfold. And part of this practice is to allow us to kind of increase our capacity to hold things that are uncomfortable. And instead of feeling bad, therefore I must have done something wrong, or I am bad, to be able to say, this feels bad, and have it stop there. It feels bad. It's uncomfortable. It's not my preference to have sadness, anxiety, depression, whatever it may be. So with this practice, with loving kindness practice, sending it both to the benefactor and ourselves, we kind of quiet our minds and soften our hearts even just a little bit. That allows us to just hold the uncomfortableness. Mindfulness practice helps with this as well. Can we just be with the uncomfortableness? Can we be kind to that sadness and worry? Can we be gentle to the irritation we feel without making it a problem and trying to shove it away? So that's one reason why it might be difficult to have loving, send loving kindness towards ourselves. The second is, also, this is part of evolutionary biology. It's part of not only humans, but all, well, I shouldn't say all beings. It's definitely part of the animal kingdom, let's just say that, is to notice to be judging one's like status in some whatever way it is, right? Because then that's how you can find a mate and these type of things. This is just part of how evolution works. So often in contemporary society, we're judging others, we're judging ourselves in terms of success or beauty or all kinds of things. Power, accomplishment. We often are, again, this may not be our dominant experience, but it's often happening, flickering in and out of our awareness or in, may not be happening all the time, but most likely it happens often enough. And it turns out that no matter what how much success we have, quote unquote, how much attractiveness as a partner we have, quote unquote, it doesn't matter what that is, we always feel like it should be more. We have this belief, like, yeah, but there should be more of this or more of that or less of this or less of that or something else. That's, again, this part of our evolutionary history. And so part of this practice is to help us not believe the authority of those thoughts. Those thoughts arise. But we can just recognize, okay, there's this idea that I should be more like this, or that person has more of that, and then we start to feel bad and think that we should be otherwise. Those are just thoughts. Doesn't mean they're true. How many of us have thoughts that turn out not to be true? Right? This is just another one that comes up. And of course, it's difficult to let go of these. They seem authoritative. We feel like we could, if I were to ask somebody, well, why do you think that they most likely could provide data? Well, X, Y, Z. It's a habit that we have to think this way. Doesn't mean it's true. And I know this is a radical idea, but part of loving kindness practice, when we quiet our minds and soften our hearts, we start to think that, oh, maybe it's not so true. Or maybe it's not true 100% of the time. Or maybe, I don't know, there starts to be a little bit more, we start to open up to the possibility that it's not true. This is a long process. It's such a strong conditioning that we have to always think that we should be something else or behaving in a different way. Which isn't to say that everything we do is always perfect, right? We know that too. But everything we do doesn't have to be a problem. So loving kindness practice helps us to undermine that self-critic, helps us to see it and to undermine its authority. Maybe it stays with us for a long time, but the power it has over us can diminish. So then maybe I'll add, so additional reasons why to do loving kindness practice for oneself is to, if we're able to mend that divide, there's like a part of us that doesn't like that other part, it can have that feeling, but if we can kind of like soften that divide and have just a little bit more sense of wholeness. It's incredibly freeing to let go of the divisiveness that we have, even to soften it a little bit. And with that certain amount of freedom and that extra energy that maybe is available now that we're not trying to keep these two parts apart, different things become possible. If we're not looking for validation out there, or if we're not looking to prove our worthiness. Instead, if we come from a mind state of contentment, if we come from a mind state of well-being, lots of different things are possible. Think how you would show up in the world if you felt really, really content. And so loving kindness practice helps create the conditions in which we can feel that contentment, that sense of well-being. Independent of whether we're feeling a well-wishing for other people, if we can just kind of help mend this divisiveness we often have for ourselves. Incredibly powerful, very powerful. And it is possible. For me, some of the most profound meditative experiences I've had haven't been joy and happiness. That does happen. But it's been just this radical contentment. Like, oh, it's okay. Everything's okay. Doesn't mean it's perfect and doesn't mean it matches my preferences. It's like, it's okay. That's quite something. It's quite something. And then maybe one last thing I'll say about this too, is that with doing loving kindness for ourselves, is that in some ways, this is what our hearts want too, right? All of us are looking for some loving kindness. And we may spend a lot of our energy or resources or focus trying to get that. And we often do receive love from others, of course. But we don't necessarily have to be dependent on what's available out there and creating the conditions out there. What a resource, right, if we can help have loving kindness for ourselves, have care for ourselves, respect for ourselves, warmth. So with that as an introduction, as I've said, we'll do loving kindness practice. We'll start with a benefactor. And in this case, a benefactor, as I mentioned, is someone for whom it's easy to love, that you have an uncomplicated relationship with. And then when you bring this being to mind, you just naturally feel, you know, like, notice how I can, like, sat up and smiled a little bit like this. Oh, yes. And this may be somebody that you know. It may not be somebody that you know. It may be a religious leader. Maybe a leader of another, any type of leader or anybody. Or if it's easiest, it could be a kitten or a puppy or a baby. Somebody for whom it's easy for you to feel love towards. And then we'll expand it into it for ourselves. And as many of you have heard me say a number of times, there are three elements to this practice. There's bringing to mind the entity, the being for whom you're sending loving kindness toward. Second is to repeat phrases. It's just an intention. It just is a way to keep our mind back on what our intention is for that time. So it's less wishful thinking, it's less magical thinking, and it's more an anchor that helps us keep our intention to send loving kindness or to cultivate loving kindness in our hearts. And loving kindness has many different aspects, so we have a few different phrases. And then the third element is any sensations you may feel in your heart center. This may or may not make sense to you, but to any feeling of warmth or openness, or however you may experience care and love. Okay, so we'll begin by taking an alert, upright posture and taking three long, slow, deep breaths. As a way to connect to our bodies, perhaps bring some relaxation. We'll just allow the breath to return to normal. With this practice, we just allow the body to breathe however it wants. We're not manipulating it or changing it. We can check in and see if there's some tension in the body that can be readily let go of or softened. We often hold tension around our eyes. Very often we don't even notice until we put our attention there. Same with the jaw. And the neck. And just see if there can be some softening of the tension. It's okay if the tension stays there. You don't have to make it go away. But also sometimes just by noticing there can be some letting go. Check in with the shoulders. And the hands. How about the back? Is there some tension in the back? Or the chest? Or the belly. Allowing the belly to relax can be really supportive. You can feel the pressure of the chair or the cushion against your body. Allow yourself to sink in and trust that it can support you. You can check in with the legs and the feet. Then we'll do a little bit of mindfulness of breathing. You can rest your awareness on the sensations of breathing, that is the abdomen moving, or the chest moving, or the feeling of the air going in and out of the nose. Choose one of those three, whichever feels the easiest, and just notice how it feels to breathe. If you discover that your mind is no longer on the sensations of breathing, can you, with kindness, just bring your attention back to the sensations of breathing? And just notice, how does an in-breath feel compared to an out-breath? I have a little bit of curiosity. Right now, there's nowhere else to be, nothing else to do. Just be here, the sensations of breathing. So before we move on to loving-kindness practice, just know that you can always come back to this practice, just very simply, just noticing how it feels to breathe. It's very simple, doesn't have to be complicated. But if you ever feel overwhelmed or lost or confused or unsure, you can always come back to this practice. Just noticing the movement of the chest or the belly or the air going in and out of your nose. So to begin loving kindness practice, bring to mind a benefactor. Someone for whom it's easy to feel love, care, warmth, respect toward. Bring this person to mind, or kitten, puppy, baby. You can check in and see if is there a certain movement of the heart when this being comes to mind. There may be, there may not be. Either is okay. And then to help support our intention to send this person loving kindness and to cultivate loving kindness, can repeat after me silently in your mind these phrases while keeping the benefactor in mind. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. You're welcome to modify the phrases and change them if there's something else that might feel more heartfelt or resonate more with you. And of course, they don't have to be in English. Choose whichever language feels like the right language for you. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Again, you can check in with your heart center or wherever else you might feel warmth or care, loving kindness. And if there is a feeling of loving kindness or care, just allow it to be as big as it would like to be. You don't have to make it be any bigger, but just allow it to be whatever it would like. And then I'll be silent here for a little while, so you can send loving kindness to the benefactor in a way that makes sense for you. And now we'll expand our loving kindness to include ourselves. In the same way that we have loving thoughts, caring thoughts towards our benefactor or lovable being, we can do the same toward ourselves. So you can have a felt sense of yourself in whatever way that makes sense for you. It could be, for example, feeling the pressure of the chair or the cushion and feeling really present here. Or it could be more of an internal sensation of yourself. Or perhaps visualizing yourself as you are now, or maybe even as you were as a child or an infant. A baby. You do whichever way feels easiest to send loving kindness toward yourself. And you, if you notice some protests, see if you can just still let the protests be there without giving them authority, without necessarily investing in them, agreeing with them. But also, we don't have to shove them away either, pretend they're not there. Maybe we even send loving kindness towards the protests. So just like we did with the benefactor, we'll say phrases to support our intention. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be healthy. May I be happy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. it's okay to give loving kindness to ourselves. We deserve loving kindness, just as all beings do. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Now I'll be silent for a little bit here. You can continue with loving kindness for yourself, for the benefactor, or perhaps if it feels like the right thing to do, you can do mindfulness of breathing. Or loving kindness to anyone else. And then to end this meditation, you can feel the pressure of the chair or cushion against your body. Feel your feet on the ground. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. So in the beginning, before we started meditating, I talked a little bit about how sometimes it can be difficult to do loving kindness towards ourselves. And the classic Buddhist teachings, instead of beginning with a benefactor, they have beginning with the oneself. Apparently, at the time of the Buddha in ancient India, it was inconceivable to not just naturally feel love for oneself. And now, kind of in the contemporary West, there's this feeling like, oh, it's not so easy. Let's start with the benefactor, where it's easier. So maybe I'd like to hear from you. You can comment or ask a question, or how is the transition for you to go from benefactor to self? Does it feel seamless, natural, easy? Or do you notice that it feels a little bit different to go? When I'm describing a benefactor, I describe somebody for whom you have an uncomplicated relationship with. But we often have complicated relationships with ourselves. Aren't so straightforward. But would anybody like to comment how that transition is, or otherwise ask a question or make another comment? Thank you, Kristen.
I was just going to say that every time I've done this, I cannot come. Because for me, I've already processed what those feelings are, and it's someone long dead, so
yeah.
Difficulty.
And can I ask you, you said that you feel like you've processed anything around their death, but is it easy for you to, or can you connect into a sense of warmth and care and love?
Yes.
And
I feel like all whatever complications in the relationship I'm kind of done with. So, and I'm not done with the complications in my relationships with living people.
Yeah. I suspect you're not alone in this, right? Of course, we have mixed feelings. So often, practitioners choose benefactors for whom they don't know very well, because those relationships tend to be less complicated. You know, somebody that we know about, but don't necessarily have a personal relationship with. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So you'll hear, the classic Buddhist teachings talk about not choosing somebody who is dead, but that's more about if you're doing very particular concentration practices or something like that. Here, we're not doing that. Here, we're cultivating a sense of warmth. We're cultivating a sense of love and kindness in your heart. So whomever you choose is fine.
I have a couple of thoughts and maybe disjointed. Let's see if they make sense. Like the difficulty of practicing loving kindness towards yourself may have to do with how we are kind of raised or, you know, brought up, right? Like the word selfish.
Mm.
It's always It's always used in a bad context. That's one of the reasons. The other is like when something goes bad, not to be self-critical. May also have to do with how we function as a society, right? Like at work. I used to work for big companies. I don't have the problem anymore. But, like at the end of a project, right, you're doing a retrospective. Well, what went wrong? Why did it go wrong? Right, it's, even though the idea is not to blame anybody, but well, it happens. So that's
what I'm Yeah. Sure. There's so much that can be said about here. This idea of it being selfish, I think many of us know, right, that if we're really busy with ourselves, busy trying to make ourselves be better, then we're not as available out there. So this kind of this adage, in order to love other people, you have to love yourself, actually turns out to be true. Right? If you can have some spaciousness and some contentment with regard to yourself, that just allows you to share that spaciousness with others. And that's what love is about, right? Not trying to get your needs met, or not trying to feel better somehow, or not trying to be on your best behavior so that you can get what you want from them or something like that. So, and then maybe a second thing I'll say about selfishness is in the last 10 years or so, maybe a little bit longer, there's been lots of research on this idea about, you know, self-compassion or sending love and kindness for oneself. And they measure specifically efficacy in the workplace, for example. And those people who practice self-compassion turn out to be better at work. There's one key reason. They're not so afraid to fail. So they're okay to lean in and get things done. Because if they fail, they're not going to spend half a year blaming themselves. Thinking, oh, I'm such a bad person, I shouldn't have done that. This leads into the second thing that you were saying. It's appropriate that when a project is finished, it's like, okay, what can we learn from this? What went well? What didn't go well? What can we do next time differently, if necessary? That's appropriate and wise. But we don't need to go the second step. Oh, man, I can't believe I didn't do that thing, and I'm such a bad person, and now nobody's going to like me and want to be in their team anymore, or I don't know, like this. We can just say, yeah, okay, we made a mistake. I made a mistake here. And just to acknowledge that and think, okay, what can I do to help support that mistake doesn't happen again in the future? What kind of conditions do I need to create? What needs to be put into place? But as opposed to, you know, keep on saying that I'm a bad person, because I did this action that perhaps turned out not to be the best, or, you know, personal error, whatever it is. We can just acknowledge them without beating ourselves up over them. There's a difference, of course, right? It's so easy, though, to slip into just beating ourselves up over them, which turns out not to be helpful. Which we may think it is, right? We think we don't want to let ourselves off the hook, because then we'll just sit around eating bonbons all the time or something. Turns out that's not the case, because a tremendous amount of energy gets put into beating ourselves up. And when we put that down, that energy becomes available. And we can use that to be in the world and to take care of things. And when we're not looking through the lens of, I've done something wrong, or I'm a bad person, or when we're looking through the lenses of what needs to happen here, then we can see more clearly, and more wisdom can arise about what needs to happen. But that's Kristin Neff, many of you know, who's doing this research with self-compassion. It's fascinating to read some of her scholarly work and some of her books out there for the wider audience. she's talking about how much resistance there is for people to do self-compassion. And so that's why there's been so much research on, okay, actually it's beneficial, even though there's a lot of resistance to do this practice. So that's kind of a long response to your comment there.
I noticed in the meditation, the first phrase that we use is, may I be safe. And I was focusing on that. And I think that that sense of safety is what allows love to come up for me, because safety, I don't think of just physical safety, but doubts and fears and skepticism and all these other things that make one feel unsafe are hindrances to self-love, to love in general. And that was really the first time I sort of connected that. So that was very useful.
Fantastic. I think that's beautiful. Right? I think this probably resonates with all of us, right? It's soften our hearts when we feel safe. When we're feeling threatened, right? There's often the opposite of softening. There's a contraction. There's a tightness that happens, a guardedness. So. Thank you for highlighting that.
So normally when I transition from my benefactor or benefactors to myself, I'm not able to cultivate that same feeling for myself. Although last week when I was doing my metta practice one day, I did feel comforted by my words, which had never happened before. Hasn't happened again since, but as you mentioned, I think it's kind of comforting for me to know that it'll come and go. That it's just because it happens once doesn't mean when it doesn't happen again, it will never happen again. So.
Yeah.
But today's and during the sit, something interesting happened for me. When I have my own four phrases that I say to myself, but one of them changed just spontaneously. And I liked it. And I said, okay, I think I'm just going to keep that because I think something's telling me that I should just use that word instead of having thought it out as to what I should say.
And this word, it felt supportive of feeling?
Yeah, it felt right.
Yeah. Absolutely, I think it's fantastic. There's no reason why we can't have a little playfulness, a little bit of creativity, a little bit of experimentation. Right? This doesn't have to be rigid. You know, it's got to be this way, formulaic. We're developing tools. We're developing capacities, capabilities for ourselves. So, in whichever way it makes sense for ourselves, and sometimes even having this idea of like, okay, I'm just going to play with this. Even that, just having that attitude of like, oh, I'm going to experiment, see some different words, maybe different languages, whatever it may be, and just see how that feels. Just that willingness can be a step towards kind of softening the heart instead of thinking that things have to be a particular way. So that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, well, it's 7:00. So I want to wish all of you a wonderful evening, and may you experience safety and happiness and health and ease. And I'll stay up here if you have some more questions. Otherwise, have a wonderful evening. Thank you.